This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump's EPA and Army Corps of Engineers announced on Tuesday their intention to rescind the 2015 Clean Water Rule. The announcement is the latest in the Trump administration's plan to roll back Obama-era protections of public resources. The 2015 Clean Water Rule, known as the Waters of the United States Rule, expanded the definition of what warranted protections, including streams and rivers. Big agribusinesses in particular rely on being able to pollute certain waterways. But all waters connect, and the rescinding of the 2015 rule is likely to impact the future safety of water overall. The rule had actually not taken effect due to a hold by a federal appeals court. Joining me to explain what this all means is Scott Edwards. He's the co-director of the Food and Water Justice at Food and Water Watch. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So first, what exactly was it that the 2015 rule entailed? This was an update of an existing law because there had been a lot of confusion over what got federal protection and what didn't?
Right. So since the Clean Water Act was passed, and that was back in 1972, there's been ongoing issues about what exactly what waterways in the United States the rule apply or the act applies to. And, you know, when Congress drafts these bills, there's a lot of ambiguous language often. It's up to the agencies to figure out exactly what Congress meant when they did these things. And so over the many years of the Clean Water Act, there's been some back and forth about how far does the Clean Water Act reach in terms of its jurisdiction over waterways in the United States and water bodies in the United States. And there's been ongoing litigation. And really, this rule arose out of some recent or mid 2000s, 2006, 2005 litigation that went up to the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court provided some guidance as to what they thought Congress meant when they passed the Clean Water Act as far as what waters were protected. And so what EPA did was use that decision by the Supreme Court and really craft this rule to further clarify how far the Clean Water Act could reach.
And that was the EPA under Obama.
Under Obama. So this came out in 2015, correct?
Right. So who did that updated rule upset? Who was angry about having to comply with federal regulations?
Right. The major opponents of the rule was the agricultural industry. And, you know, let me just preface this all by saying it wasn't such a broad-reaching interpretation of the Clean Water Act. It didn't significantly change the way that the Clean Water Act has been interpreted by federal agencies for decades now. And so this wasn't a major upheaval or expansion. Industry will tell you this is a broad overreach of the Clean Water Act and what the federal agencies were allowed to do. That's simply not the case. This was simply clarification, and it made some very, quite frankly, from our perspective, minor inroads into what the Clean Water Act could do. At Food and Water Watch, we think the rule should have been much stronger than it is. But of course, when industry sees any indication that there's regulation, they put up a big fuss and make a lot more out of it than it is. So this was mostly the agricultural industry kicking and screaming, because for decades, they've gotten away with being very, very significant polluters of our waterways. With pretty much impunity. This rule didn't change that much, but again, any even little inroad, they felt the need to really blow it out of proportion and make a big fuss about it.
And of course, the Trump administration came in, Donald Trump came in promising to repeal two regulations for every new regulation that was put forward. And of course, we should always, I think, try to remember the word regulation ought to be seen as protection, right? I mean, we're talking about protection of public resources, and pro-corporate figures like to cast it as the sort of choking off of their profits or any kind of hampering of their profits. So how is these big agribusinesses that do pollute our waterways, we should also remember that waterways connect, right? So pollution in one area eventually impacts the safety of drinking water in another area, right?
Right. I mean, you can't separate waterways. You know, they all, and
it's like air.
You know, I think, sorry, right. Right. And so what that, when I referenced that Supreme Court decision before, what the court had said and what EPA put into its rule was that if there's a nexus between a waterway, the Clean Water Act originally said you can protect waters of the U.S., navigable waters. So when you think about that, you think about our bays and our big rivers and larger streams. And those are unquestionably Clean Water Act. Where the controversy came up is when EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers started to look at more isolated waters of body, wetlands, patches of wetlands here or there, or in California you have vernal pools, agricultural ditches, drainage ditches. So things that aren't typically considered to be navigable, but are connected to navigable. As you point out, there's no disconnecting these waterways, even a wetlands that is miles from a river is typically hydrologically connected through ground flow. But even if there's not a hydrological connection, there's often, and this is where the court was going, an ecological connection between wetlands and larger waterways. They could be breeding grounds for migratory birds, for example. So they're all connected. And from our perspective, they should all be. There's no good reason not to protect all of these things. They're all part of a larger ecological system here built around waterways.
Are there safe options for agricultural companies to dispose of their wastewater that simply cost more?
Are there safe ways to do it? Sure. You know, and I'll give you an example. One of the big contributors to pollution in our waterways are the ever increasing concentrated animal feeding operations, these CAFOs, these animal farms. You know, one of the problems we have is people and our policymakers and industry lobbyists try to perpetuate this vision of farming as it was 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Right. They never talk about agricultural corporations. They talk about ranchers and cattle farmers. So you picture these individual family-owned farmers, et cetera.
Right. It's a myth, right? It's a nice picture to paint. Doesn't exist. We're talking about these massive feedlot facilities, massive amounts of manure. You know, many of them producing more manure than cities, human, you know, populations of cities in the swine sector, in the cattle sector. That manure, if that were human waste, would be required to be treated, properly treated, and all the pathogens removed and all the contaminants removed before it was discharged or disposed of properly. In the case of animal agriculture, they're just dumping it on fields. And they're dumping it on fields under this pretext that they're growing crops and they're applying it in agronomic amounts and only putting down what the crops can take up. But that's not what's happening. They're using these croplands as waste disposal fields and just dumping as much manure as they produce onto these fields.
Which leaches into the water system, the groundwater systems.
Exactly. Or when it rains, it simply runs off the surface and right into the nearby streams. If this were human waste, we demand that it be treated. That is expensive. So there are other ways to do this, though, by enforcing nutrient management plans that should attach to all these facilities and enforce monitoring provisions so that they can monitor when there's runoff. I mean, for this industry, it's pretty much a free-for-all. They can dump as much waste as they want. The state agencies aren't regulating this. The federal agencies aren't really regulating this. They all look the other way. So there are inexpensive things we can do in terms of best management practices and nutrient management plan compliance and monitoring. There are much more technological and expensive things we can do, like waste treatment. But what it really comes down to is we have now a system of agriculture that is completely unsustainable. We're growing far too many animals in far too small of a land area. We go down to a place like the Eastern Shore of Maryland, the Chesapeake, you know, millions of birds in a small peninsula that jumps out into the Chesapeake Bay, producing, you know, massive amounts of chicken manure every year. It's going to kill that bay. There's no other way around it if you we continue to support these unsustainable operations. And so the Clean Water Act, or the waters of the U.S. rule, tried to make some minor inroads into what would be regulated under agriculture, these drainage ditches and other places where the pollutants are coming from. And that's what got ag kicking and screaming. Because I said, they've been getting away with virtually no regulation for decades now.
So how popular is the Clean Water Rule? How much public support is there for these regulations, for these protections of our public resources?
Well, there's a lot of support among people who understand what it does and what it's for and understands the importance of clean water. I mean, you talk about, you know, Trump and saying that, you know, for him, this is getting rid of two regulations for every new one. And that's the level of thinking that Trump and his supporters engage on this regulatory process here. There's no deep thinking about whether this is good for the country, bad for the country, as you said, whether it's protective of waterways. This is simply a deregulatory revolution that's taking place without any thought to benefit. So I think that everybody who's informed, engaged, who thinks deeply about these issues understands the value of rules. And again, from us, it didn't even go far enough. But we're forgetting 50, 60 years ago, what motivated the Clean Water Act was the fact that our rivers were literally bursting into flames. And I think we're now dealing with generations that have forgotten. We've taken clean water for granted in this country, and we forget all the protections that were put in place and still need to be maintained if we're going to continue to enjoy clean, healthy water. And so I think we need a dose of reality here and a look back as to how we got to the Clean Water Act. And everybody needs to think carefully about whether we want to return to those days in the 50s and 60s of massive toxic blooms and fish kills and rivers on fire. And we don't want to go there.
Well, so the League of Conservation Voters had a poll in 2015 when the Clean Water Rule was first announced, and they found 80% of voters nationwide supported the rule, including 68% of Republicans, 75% of Independents, and 94% of Democrats. And more than 3 in 5 voters think the government should be doing more to protect water from pollution. Now, didn't the Clean Water Rule of 2015 get stuck in the courts, however?
There were some challenges as to whether this was an overreach by EPA, and it was undergoing some litigation. That's really not a – I mean, virtually every piece of regulatory rulemaking that comes out of federal agencies, EPA is a prime example, ends up in courts. And so that's really not an indicator that it's broken or that there's something wrong
with
it.
Well, had it begun to be implemented since 2015?
Well, EPA was generally abiding by it. Again, this largely put into formal practice something that the agency has been doing for decades.
I see. Okay. So when it was caught up in the courts, it wasn't that it was held back from actually being implemented. It simply had been formalizing what the agency had been doing under Obama.
Pretty much so, yes. And so they were doing it on a case by case basis, looking at each, for example, they'd go out where a developer was putting in a housing development, and there were wetlands, and the developer filled in wetlands, and a decision by the Army Corps whether that was a Clean Water Act jurisdiction wetland and whether to proceed with it. It was very much a case by case basis on some of those more borderline waterways. And so this tried to formalize that, but that didn't stop. Right. The Army Corps from proceeding as it was anyways.
So, Scott, at this point, what recourse is there with the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers announcing that it's going to rescind this rule? Are they taking any public input?
Yes, so they'll have to. So they have to propose a withdrawal, and that has to go through a public comment period. And so there will be an opportunity for groups, and I'm sure many will, to weigh in on whether it's appropriate to withdraw this rule or not. And then they talk about a replacement. I'm not quite optimistic that there'll be any replacement of any benefit to anybody who cares about waterways, of course. So there will be an administrative process. There will be a public comment period and then a finalization of this. And that will take some time. But, again, I talked to somebody a while back about the Paris Accord, and it's sort of to draw a parallel. It's still up to federal agencies to exert their authority and to protect our waterways with or without this rule in place. So our bigger problem now, the withdrawal of this rule, just as pulling out of climate of the Paris Accord, was shows very clearly what this administration thinks about climate and clean water and those kinds of things. Mm. But even with it in place, and even with our inclusion in Paris, it is up to strong federal agencies to exert their authority and to protect our rivers and to protect our waterways. And so with or without this rule, we have in place an EPA that's simply not going to do that. And so it's important that we engage in this. It's important that we get a good Clean Water Act rule back in place so that when we do have an administration that cares about communities and public health, that they have the tools necessary to go out and exert their authority. This agency, this White House, will not do that, regardless of whether this rule is in place or not.
And so if people do want to see what the EPA has planned, you can go to the EPA website, by the way, epa.gov/clean water rule. We'll post a link to that from our website later today. I'm assuming that's also a place to look for where they might be able to put in public comment.
Right. They should. I have on there, used to be in the past, EPA websites pulled a lot of information off, and I haven't looked, but it should be published in the Federal Register. There should be links to the proposed withdrawal and a place where people can send in comments and let their voices be heard.
And we will attempt to find all of those details and put them on our website later today. Scott, give out a website for Food and Water Watch.
Yes, we're at fwwatch.org.
fwwatch.org or foodandwaterwatch.org. Thank you so much, Scott, for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
My guest is Scott Edwards, the co-director of Food and Water Justice at Food and Water Watch. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.